Welcome to Sports Spectrum, the sports and faith podcast that brings Jesus back into the conversation. Here's your host, Jason Romano.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the show. I am Jason. This is Sports Spectrum. And of course, our website, sportspectrum.com, is a great place to go for all of our content. Every podcast is there. A bunch of articles and different stories for the last 35 years are all available there at sportspectrum.com. And you can start your day right with Sports Spectrum as well, with a daily devotional that is available every morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, right there at sportspectrum.com. And of course, my email address is a great way to reach us directly, jason@sportspectrum.com. We welcome your guest ideas, your show topics, stories that we should be covering, different athletes, whatever it is, on whatever level it is, whether it's high school, college, or pro, you can send it to us or reach me directly with your feedback, jason@sportspectrum.com. And we want to say thank you to our partners and sponsors today, Ronald Blue Trust. Their advisors applying biblical wisdom and technical expertise to help their clients make wise financial decisions, experiencing clarity and confidence, and leaving a lasting legacy. This is the time of year when a lot of us have questions regarding our finances. It's tax season. What are we doing about that? What about jobs? Where should we be investing our money, our future? What about giving and being generous? That's what Ronald Blue Trust does. That's what they're about. And they can assist you in all the questions that you have and your finances. So check them out at ronblue.com to learn more. Ronald Blue Trust, ronblue.com. I'm real excited about today's guest. His name is Kevin Burrell. He works for the Chicago White Sox as an MLB area scouting supervisor. He's been scouting for 30 plus years and knows this game in and out. He's really in charge of the amateur scouting area, which is college and high school for baseball. So Kevin's been around the game a long time. He was actually a player before he was a scout. He was selected in the first round, a first round draft pick back in 1981 in the MLB June amateur draft by the Boston Red Sox. And he bounced around in the minor leagues for many years and never made it to the major leagues as a player. He reached as high as AAA in 1987, 89, 90, and 91, but never made it to the majors, and then he was done playing pro ball at the age of 30 in 1992 and turned his attention to scouting. So we talk a lot of baseball, a lot of what scouting entails with Kevin, but even more, Kevin is using his role in baseball as an opportunity to point people back to Jesus, as ministry. Discipleship as an MLB scout. What does that look like? We talk a lot about Kevin's desire and his heart to make discipleship makers. It's a real good conversation here with Kevin Burrell. Take a listen as he joins us here today on Sports Spectrum. Kevin, welcome to the show, man. How are you?
Man, thanks so much, Jason. I appreciate you having me. I can't wait. I've been looking forward to this. Doing great.
Good. It's good to have you. Good to see you. And now we're in 2021, and we're praying and hoping that, you know, we have a season and we have, you know, a full, what can be as close to regular season as we can for Major League Baseball. But your role is a unique one because you're in the amateur scouting department for colleges. So I'm wondering, why don't you start with just explaining what your role is with the White Sox?
Sure. So I cover all of the state of Georgia and all of the state of South Carolina for the White Sox organization. And in their amateur department, we have two different departments. One is a pro department. One's an amateur department. So I'm in the amateur department for the draft. And I've been covering this area for quite some time. So, you know, my job is to certainly go out and scout and evaluate the prospects in both states. In college, in the NCAA, in junior college, in high school. So I'm responsible for those two states. So I supervise an area, this area, and oversee this area for the draft for the White Sox.
You've been doing this for how many years now, Kev? What year is this?
Well, I started scouting in 1992. Okay. So through a transition, I started actually with the White Sox working as an area supervisor. And then I transitioned to the Boston Red Sox and the Houston Astros for a period of time as their national cross-checker. So I went all over the United States And I did that for about 10 or 12 years. And then I transitioned back to the White Sox organization, working back in the area. And I'd missed so much time with my family, traveling the country for so many years. And I just wanted to kind of dial it back and get back into an area and start signing players again and scouting an area. And I didn't have to be on a plane so much.
Well, the role can be a thankless, very thankless role as a scout, right? Because you, like you said, you're traveling in the midst of maybe what would be, I don't want to say the worst time, because it's not a bad time. You're doing a pretty cool job. But in the moment where you're most busy, how many times are you on the road during the year? 200, something like that?
Yeah, in a normal year, of course, this hasn't been a normal year, but in a normal year, you know, it's anywhere between 150 and 160 nights as in my job. When I was a national cross checker, it was 240, 250 nights a year.
Wow.
So, I was gone a lot. I would come home for 10 days. I would be gone for 10 days on a trip. I'd come home for two, repack, kiss my wife and, play with my son. And then I would repack back up, headed back out for about another 10 or 12 days.
Man, what a life. I mean, that's so difficult, but yeah, probably you must have had so many neat experiences being on the road and going to so many different places. There has to be the good and the bad that come with the job like that, right?
Yeah, there is. There's positive and negatives. One of the stories I could share with you was when I was working in the Red Sox organization, and I was in Atlanta, went to the airport in Atlanta, flew nonstop to Seattle, Washington, got off the plane, went and saw a left-handed pitcher named Ty Howington, and who wound up becoming a first-round draft pick. Evaluated him, went back to the airport, got back in my rental car, went back to the airport, hopped on a plane, and flew over to Honolulu. Got off the plane, rented my car, went and saw two players. I saw Brandon League, and I saw a kid by the name of Bronson Sardina. Okay. And went back to the airport there in Honolulu, got in, returned my rental car in, got on the flight, and flew all night to Dallas, Texas. I got off the plane. I got a rental car, checked in the airport Marriott North there in Dallas, walked in, had a bowl of grits real quick, showered and cleaned up, got in my rental car and drove down to Waco, Texas to Baylor University, where I evaluated and was scouting a catcher by the name of Kelly Shopik, who we wound up drafting in the second round. On the way back to Dallas, I ran off the road. I fell asleep. So I was so exhausted. It was like 17 hours of flight time. Wow. And I was just exhausted. So fortunately, those little nubs in the road kind of alerted me, and I was able to get back to the hotel and crash for 24 hours.
Mm. Yeah, crashed in bed, not crashed the car.
Exactly.
That's a crazy, crazy story. Kevin Burrell is our guest on Sports Spectrum. It's an interesting job, too, because there's, you know, every player probably wants you to come and see them, but then every player probably thinks they're a certain level, or I don't want to say better than they are, but you're a scout, so they want to impress you. They know you have, you know, the ear of people who are going to make that decision to sign or to draft. What is that like, being in that role? And certainly it probably allows you to make relationships too on a lot of different levels, but that's got to be a tough role, because your evaluation of a player, it might be different than others. And sometimes your evaluation is spot on and right. Hopefully you get it more right than wrong, but sometimes you might miss on a guy, right?
Quite often we miss on a guy. I kind of laugh about it, because it's one of the only jobs in America where you can fail, you know, maybe 96 or 97% of the time and still have a job, maybe equal to a weatherman. I'm not sure.
I mean, it's close. And a scouting supervisor.
Exactly. So, but yeah, you know, the beautiful thing about, especially working back as an area supervisor, working my area, I'm very passionate about it. And I love what I do. I don't feel like I go work every day. I just love what I do. And this is my 39th year in baseball, between playing and scouting. And so it is, it's a passion of mine. I enjoy the relationships that, as you mentioned, really enjoy the relationships. I enjoy building relationships with parents and with the prospects themselves. You know, now we're doing a lot of Zoom type of conferences and interviews with prospects where, you know, even the last several years, we drive into their home and get to meet them or their parents or at their college. So it's, you know, this whole environment of COVID has changed a lot of aspects of that. But it's great to build relationships with these parents and the prospects.
Yeah, I want to ask you about 2020 last year and what that was like, because initially you're probably able to do some scouting before COVID hits and watch some of these guys in person. And then, of course, after what was it, March 10th, 11th or so, everything shuts down. And, you know, maybe there was still some baseball that was happening. I don't think there was initially around this country. Now there might be, but back then, I don't think there was. So what was that like for you, kind of adjusting and maybe scouting in person and then suddenly having to make a pivot and everything changes?
It was a huge, huge adjustment. So, you know, for me, I was headed up to Lake Point up in North Atlanta, and I was going to go up there and watch a pitcher that was pitching at a high school. They had to use that facility. So I was headed up there to watch him. He had committed to a Vanderbilt University. And on my way up there, I got a phone call that everything was shut down up there. They completely shut down Lake Point. The teams had got back on the bus, had went back to their high school, their high schools. And I had to turn around and head back down south to where I live. And it changed the whole dynamics of everything. At that point in time, March 12, 2020, all scouting as we knew it stopped.
So then what? So what's the pivot? What's the first pivot, the big pivot that you had to make? Obviously, learning how to use Zoom, which is what we're taping this conversation on, was one of them. But what's the pivot that you had to make? Did you have to gather around and talk to your bosses and your coworkers and say, okay, what are we doing now? How are we still going to be able to get our job done? And were you able to get your job done? Because I think the draft, if I remember, it was only like four or five rounds, right? In 2020, it was a shorter draft. So it looked completely different. A lot of guys that you might scout and maybe get later in the rounds, that didn't happen this year.
That's exactly right. We learned really quickly the value and the importance and the priority of video scouting. So, which is a good thing. It's a good thing. Some good has come out of this. And, you know, certainly expanding the horizon of analytics and trying to grasp and understand a lot of that as well. So there was a lot of video scouting that went on. Our scouting director and our assistant scouting director, they really laid out some clear definitions of what they were looking for, what we needed to do, what we needed to focus on in this process of still preparing for a draft. Like you said, it was cut down to five rounds. So we could be much more selective, and then signability played in there. The challenge was after the fifth round. After the fifth round, we could still sign players for $20,000 max. That was it. So we had to figure out which players had interest in signing for $20,000 and which ones didn't. So there was a lot of work. There was actually a lot of work done from our home and from our home offices of trying to really a lot of phone work, a lot of video work to try to piece together and put together this just challenging draft.
Is there one story or one guy that you can think back on your career? You said this is almost 30 years now that you've been doing the scouting thing, that you just can say, I nailed that, or we nailed that, because it is a process and it's a team decision, not just one person. But one where you said 96, 97% that you might miss on, that you might, you know, not have that, you know, fortune of getting the right guy. But then there's that 3% or so that you get and you just nailed it. Is there one that kind of sticks out for you, or maybe a couple?
Yeah, there's actually a couple. And, you know, of course, I've signed a lot of players as an area scouting supervisor, directly responsible as an area. But the two that really stand out was when I was a national cross checker, once with Houston and once with the Red Sox. In particular, I was down in Florida, and our area scout, a gentleman by the name of Luke Wren, covered Florida. And Luke had University of Florida as one of his schools that he covered. And so we got up to the draft, and our scouting director kind of looked at me across the table, and he said, hey, here's the draft board. Do you see anybody up here that has some interest in, or do you think that could fit in a role at Lowell, which is Lowell, Mass., which is our short season A-ball team?
Sure.
So he said, hey, we're just looking for somebody that's an infielder, you know, somebody that has some ability that can fill in a role up there. I said, yeah, you know, I saw this guy. I saw, you know, his hands are okay. His speed was a little short. His arm was a little short. He's a contact bat guy. He puts the ball in play, knows how to play the game. Our area scout, Luke Wren, likes him. He did a great job on covering him. So he goes, well, can he play at low? And I said, yeah, sure he can. So he said, well, let's take him. So we drafted him. And it was probably around, I don't know, 17, 18, 19th round, somewhere in there. It was low. And we signed him. He's a senior, didn't get much money at all. He goes out to low, plays every day, makes the all-star team, works his way up to high A the next year, all-star team, double A, all-star team, triple A, all-star team. So we came around. We were making a trade for a guy by the name of Ed Sprague. Dan Duquette was our general manager. Yeah. We took this guy off the roster because we had Nomar Garcia Parra playing shortstop. And we took him off the roster to make room for Ed Sprague. And the Anaheim Angels claimed him. He went on to become a World Series MVP. And it was David Eckstein.
Wow.
So great story there. It was a collaborative effort on everybody's part. I think we nailed that one. Yeah. So the second one, I was in California. And my scouting director, we were about a month from the draft. He asked me to fly to Dallas to go see a particular player that he had interest in, our area scout liked as well. Baseball America did not have him listed in the top 100 prospects in the country. He was on the dead pile as far as that was concerned. Mm-hmm. So I flew in there. There was me and another national advanced scout there to watch this player that day. I sat way down the line. I wasn't behind home plate. I tried to stay out of eye's way and watch this player. Saw everything I wanted to see that day. Got back to the hotel, called my scouting director, and I said, absolutely, I would take him with our first pick, which was not till the bottom of the second round. We took him. The draft came around. We drafted him, and he blew through the minor leagues and wound up becoming a perennial all-star, and his name was Hunter Pence.
Sure.
So two very vivid players that I was fortunate enough to be a part of. And again, it was a collaborative effort with our area scout and our scouting director.
I love that. Those stories are awesome because you know, but you don't know, you really have an eye and you think that there might be potential, like you said, with David Eckstein, but you don't know that he's going to be a World Series MVP someday. You don't know that. And then he turns out to be, and you're just like, all right, I remember when we go back to Lowell, Massachusetts. That's a great story. Quick break from our conversation to tell you about our partners and sponsors today, Ronald Blue Trust. We thank them. They are amazing partners in ministry with us here at Sports Spectrum. Wealth management strategies and trust services based on biblical principles. They offer comprehensive financial services and objective advice to over 9,500 clients across the wealth spectrum in all 50 states. We're in a new year here. 2021 is here. And yet the questions that we have regarding our financial investments, our money, we still have those questions. A lot of us do. Ronald Blue Trust has the answers. We trust them. Financial retirement and estate planning, investment management, personal trust and estate settlement services, bill paying, family office, institutional services, retirement plan consulting. They do it all, and they lead from a biblical perspective. That's why we love Ronald Blue Trust. We're grateful to have them as sponsors. You can learn more right now by going to ronblue.com, ronblue.com. That's the website. Tell them Sports Spectrum sent you. Ronald Blue Trust, ronblue.com. Kevin Burrell is our guest here today on Sports Spectrum. I want to get into your faith. This is the intersection of sports and faith. So let's intersect the conversation with your faith. Your faith's important to you. Actually, I want to share this too. The way I heard about you, because we never met, a couple years back, I think it's been over 3 years now, I spoke at North Star Church Kennesaw, Georgia, right outside of Atlanta, with our friends Mike Lynch and C.A. Phillips, who's there. And they told me about this devotional that they do every week. You know, Wednesdays it comes out. And they say, hey, you might want to sign up for it, or we could even have you contribute because you already write your devotional and we could carry something onto that. And I'm like, great, that sounds good. Then all of a sudden I'm getting the devotional and I'm seeing the name Kevin Burrell. Like, oh, Area Scout, Kevin Burrell. And he's writing these devotionals. So I'm like, this is a pretty cool thing. And I don't know why it took so long, Kevin, for you and I to connect. But finally, you know, we reconnected, a few months back on social media. And here we are doing an interview. But that's when I first heard your name. So I realized your faith is obviously very important to you. So tell us about that.
Yeah, sure. So it is valuable to me. It's the priority of my life. I was born and raised in Southern California and in San Diego, outside of San Diego, a small town called Poway. And So I grew up there, and I went to a private school growing up, all the way up till freshman year in high school. And so grew up in church. My mom and dad took me to church Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, Wednesday nights. I grew up, as I said, in a Christian school. So I had a lot of head knowledge. I understood clearly from a head knowledge standpoint what it meant to have a right relationship with God through Jesus Christ. However, I never possessed it in my heart. I had head knowledge, but I missed it 18 inches between my heart and my head. Mm-hmm. And so in eighth grade, I came home from an awards banquet, and the gentleman that spoke that night, I could not tell you his name, but he posed this question to me. And he said, if you were to die tonight and you were to stand before God in heaven and God were to ask you, why should I let you into heaven? What would you say? And I paused and I thought about that. And I did not have an answer. And so it ate at me that night at 11 o'clock at night in my bedroom. So I called my dad in my room and I said, hey, I realized for the first time tonight that if I was to die, that I would spend eternity away from God. And I want to make that right. And so that night, June 3rd, 1976, I invited Christ to come into my life to be my Lord and Savior. And that started, and that set me on a journey that it has transformed my life through some ups and downs, some struggles and some trials. However, it is what I'm focused on. And I like to try to say it this way, that I'm a minister in disguise as a scout. So that's the way I try to put it. And my first passion is to make an impact on people's lives and serve them and help them any way I can. And then leverage my influence as a baseball scout to try to impact people's lives and impact the kingdom.
When did you realize that you could use baseball as sort of a ministry outlet, right? That yes, you're a minister disguised as a baseball player, disguised as a baseball scout, because you did play, and we're going to talk about your journey of playing in a second. But when did you realize that? Like, when did that click? Because for a lot of people, those listening, you might know this too, men struggle with looking at their job, their vocation as ministry. They just look at it as a job. I can't share my faith here. I can't be a Christian in the workplace. I know I struggled with that for some time at ESPN. When did you discover that you could use this platform, baseball, as, like you say, ministry?
So as a player, when I started playing baseball out of high school, I knew that obviously I knew I was a Christian. I knew I had a sports outlet and I had Christianity. I had no idea how to use it.
Right.
Okay. The way I'm wired, I have very much an evangelistic type of personality. And so there was, through that process of years, I was a baseball chapel leader. I would always try to lead our chapels on our team and make sure that we had the right speakers on Sunday to come in before we were dressed on the field, and we could, you know, that individual could talk to players that were interested in coming to baseball chapel. But it wasn't until I finished playing when I clearly understood this process of what it meant to be a disciple and then what it meant to make disciples. That was the transition. That was the crossroads of understanding what it meant to leverage my influence as a baseball scout and using that to influence baseball coaches and athletes' lives, and that there's a process to that. And until I learned that process, I had no idea what I was doing. I was winging it really good, but I didn't understand a clear process of what that meant and how to do it. So it was probably about 15 to 20 years ago, probably 20 years ago, when it finally clicked with me, and it helped me to understand what it meant to, number one, be a disciple. And then once I understood how to be a disciple, then it taught me how to actually go out and make a process of how to make a disciple. So I know that's important. I know, you know, being a disciple is important, but how we do that and the process or the grid of working from that, there is a clear process of how to do that.
Well,
and so when I understood that, it revolutionized my whole thinking about the way I do ministry.
Well, that key word that you just mentioned is process, because discipleship isn't a microwavable thing. I mean, it's a process, and it's a lifetime, really. Once you say yes to Jesus, of continuing to be discipled and to disciple others. But what does that look like? Because you said you started to figure that out, and I'm thinking this is a guy who's on the road a lot, who's traveling all around the country. So, you know, I'll just say it. When do you have time to make disciples, Kevin? So how did you figure that out? And what does that look like? What's a practical way? Because somebody might be listening and say, listen, I want to be a disciple maker. I want to be discipled. It's just hard with my job and traveling or whatever. So what did that look like for you?
Yeah. So that's a great question. So when I finally understood the Great Commission in Matthew chapter 28, verse 19 and 20, and where, you know, those were Jesus' famous last words, right? So he's on the Mount of Olives, and he's getting ready to ascend back to his Father in heaven. And he's got his disciples around him. And he made this statement. It was his famous last words. And he said, therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to do everything I've commanded you. And surely I will be with you always to the very end of the age. So there was three key components in that: go, baptize, and teach. And so I thought, going, what does going mean? What does that mean? Go and make disciples. When I finally understood what this means, as I go to the airport, as I get on the plane, as I fly somewhere, as I get to the rental car counter, as I get to the ballpark, as I go to the grocery store, I am going, and as I am going, I am seeking to make disciples everywhere I go. It is just not to church. It is every part of the fabric of your life, everywhere you go. So my grid that I work from is really, it's the grid that Jesus left us. And I said, Jesus said, come and see. Then he asked them to come and follow. Then he asked them to come and remain with him. And then he asked them to go out for me, or send them out and multiply it. So that's really what I do. That's the grid. Those are the four areas that I work from. So as I'm going to the store, I might, or as I go to a restaurant, I have a little invite card to our church. And I say, hey, I just want you to come and see. I just want you to come and see. So I give them a card. Guess what? There's been many of them that's come and saw. They come to church. They sit in the church. They listen. And then they take that next step. They say, you know what? Jesus said, come and see, come and follow. Come and follow is get into a small group. Start doing life. Okay? He asked his disciples, hey, you come and see me now. I want you to come and follow me. So it's a deeper step. It's another step. And so at that point, they get into a small group. They start growing in their faith. And then Jesus said, come and remain in me. Come go deeper in me. Come do life with me. And so at that point, I try to transition them from a community group or a home group, or maybe a Sunday school class in a traditional church, to a discipleship group where you grow in your faith. You get deeper. You start really understanding the principles of Christ. And then that point, that the next goal of that is to train them so that they can then go out and multiply it and reproduce it and start their own. Mm. And so that's good. The grid I work from. So it's four steps: come and see, come and follow, come and remain, come and go out.
That's really
well reach said. Out. I reach out. I plug them in. I build them up, and I send them out. That's really my grid that I work from, and that is the process that Jesus used. And that's the process that if it's good enough for him, then it's good enough for me.
Absolutely, the greatest leader of all time, as I say, exactly. Jesus. There's no doubt. Before we wind down here, I do want to mention you were a first round pick back in 1981 in MLB amateur draft, speaking of drafts and speaking of scouting. So you were a highly touted prospect coming out, I have to imagine, if you're a first rounder by the Red Sox. Interestingly enough, I looked you up because I wanted to see if you had played here in Bristol, because where I live in Bristol, Connecticut, used to be the AA affiliate for the Boston Red Sox. And I'm guessing maybe you went to New Britain instead when they went to the New Britain Red Sox. But that was an interesting time in the early 80s to come into baseball. Obviously, my heyday was the mid 80s, watching baseball in the late 80s as a kid, and you reached as high as AAA. So take us through that process. You never reached to the majors. You never got to the majors, but just give us sort of a snapshot of what life was like trying to go in through that minor league journey that you went through.
Yeah. So like I said, I grew up in San Diego, and I was, you know, the draft has changed so much from 1981 to what it is today. So, when I was drafted, I had to go away from home for the first time. Back then we didn't have travel teams. Okay. Right. We played in American Legion, maybe in the summertime. We played with some scout teams right there in San Diego, but we didn't have travel baseball like it is today. So my first time away from home, my first time to ever use a wood bat was when I got into pro ball in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
So, I got on the plane. My father put me on the plane in San Diego. I flew to Pittsburgh. Never been on a plane before. Got off, connected to a small commuter plane to a place called Elmira, New York, upstate New York.
Sure.
And I was playing in the New York Penn League back then. That's a little bit it was a very advanced league. You know, at that time, John Elway was playing in that league. Yeah. And there was a lot of good players, a lot of good college players that were playing in that league. So it was advanced for me as a high school player. So as I got there, I got very homesick. It was very homesick. And first time away from home, small town, Elmira, New York. I was staying in a dormitory in the college dorm. Mm-hmm. And so we got $11 a day meal money. And we made $600 a month.
Wow.
And so I had a $382 phone bill calling back home for 1 month, $382.50. And I was so homesick. But it started a journey. It started a process of really understanding what it meant to be a professional. And, you know, I look back now, and there were so many guys on that team. Well, we had 40 guys on that team in that league that year in 1981. And we had several guys that got to the major leagues off that team. So, yes, it was a process. I played with the Red Sox organization, and then I was involved in what's called a Rule 5 draft in the wintertime. And the New York Mets came by and selected me off the unprotected list, and I was Rule 5 drafted to the New York Mets organization. And they wound up playing, went to major league camp with the 1986 Mets. And I was with them. Yeah, it was really cool. And even today I have a lot of friends of mine on that team that are still around. And so yeah, I was in big league camp with them, got sent down. We had at that time, we had, you know, Gary Carter was a catcher, and Barry Lyons was a catcher, and John Gibbons was a catcher, and Greg Olson was a catcher, and I was a catcher. So catching was really stacked up in that organization. And so from there, I was involved in a trade to the San Francisco Giants organization, where I played out in Phoenix in AAA with the Giants, went to big league camp out there a couple of years with them, was sent down. And then from there, I wound up signing as a free agent with the Kansas City Royals organization, and in 1988, and went to four major league spring trainings there, and got sent down every one of them. And so it was a year after year of getting the opportunity to go to major league camp, and some were relatively quick getting some sent down. Some of them were a lot longer, and but never got a chance to break with the club. And so at that point in 1991, I had an elbow injury in 1990. It never really came back 100% like it was at one point. And so I decided to play the 1991 season. It was never the same. And I transitioned out of playing in 1991 and started scouting in 1992.
Well, I don't know if you know this, maybe you do. I'm a Mets fan from the 80s. I mean, 86 is my team, and Darryl Strawberry and Dwight Gooden are the baseball heroes of mine at 13 years old. So is there a story for, I mean, you weren't there the whole season, but that training camp, I mean, there's books written about that 86 team on all different levels because of the craziness of it, what they were able to achieve. Did you see the talent when you were in that spring training in 86, like, oh, this is going to be a 100-win team? They won 108 games that year in the World Series.
It was by far the organization that I played in that had the most depth of talent.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting because Doc Gooden, you know, I would catch him in spring training, and Strawberry was there. Keith Hernandez was there. Kevin Elster was there. Sure. There were so many Keith Miller was there.
Yeah.
There were so many, so that the depth of talent, was so deep. And Gary Carter was very gracious to me. My locker was a couple down from him, and he was very gracious to me. Very kind, always helpful. And, I know he's no longer with us, but I will always remember that man because he was a huge help to me personally as I walked through that period. You know, yes, super talented team, free spirited in spring training. They did what they wanted to do, and they were just so gifted. They were so talented. And Davey Johnson was the manager, and it was just an honor to get to be around all those players. You know, I have a picture up in my office. Of that team, of that spring training picture, and I'm up in the top left row. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really a fascinating time for me personally in my life.
Yeah, it was for me too, obviously, as a fan, but being 13, 14 years old, really until I graduated high school and watching those guys play. And, you know, they won in some ways despite themselves because of some of the stuff that they were doing, and they lost some ways. They probably should have won more. I tell people that 88 team was probably as good as the 86 team with depth, but you get to the playoffs and it's just so hard to win. And you were a part of another championship team with the White Sox years later, obviously as a scout. But what was that like, kind of being a part of an organization and seeing another title? That must have been pretty neat.
Yeah, actually, I came in just after that. I came back to the White Sox in the fall of 07. I was with Houston before that, so it's real ironic because they played each other.
They did, and, yes.
So I did not get to – I came in after the 2005 season, just after it. But, you know, just the chemistry that these teams have to win a championship, it's huge. It's just huge. Just the chemistry that goes on. Sometimes you don't always have the best players. I always ask prospects now when I interview them. I said, okay, you have to take off your hat as a player, and now you're the manager. And I want you to answer this question. You're the manager of the team. You're getting ready to go into a 7-game World Series championship. Do you play your 9 best, or do you play your best 9? And it stimulates conversation and it stimulates thinking, because all of a sudden there's silence, and it really focuses, and you can see a lot how their gears of baseball in their mind begin to work. And so that is something that is just huge with the chemistry of championship teams. Not necessarily the most talented, but they know how to play, and they know how to play together, and they have a chemistry that is really you can't beat it.
So when you say best 9 versus 9 best, the chemistry side is your best nine, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you might have the most talent on a team, but they don't play best together.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the best chemistry. And so some managers will remove maybe one of their better players for a guy that gels with and connects with and plays well with as a team.
Hmm. I love that. We could talk all day about that kind of stuff. Kevin Burrell, this has been fantastic. Thank you again for being here on the show. My last question to you, and if you hear this show, you know where it's going. We all here have lessons that the Lord teaches us, certainly a lot of lessons in 2020. What's the lesson that he's showing and teaching you right now, Kevin Burrell? What's God been showing you, teaching you, impressing on your heart, all the words that you can use, but what's the great lesson he's showing you right now?
Yeah, I like to say this saying, and it's really something that I think about often, is the pain of discipline is always less than the pain of regret. Mm. So God's teaching me that time is short. I'm older now. Okay. I'm not 30 years old anymore. And so I have a limited amount of window that I want to focus my life very intentionally in such a way that's going to bring honor to him. I do not want to stand before him someday and for him to say, "Hey, look, you signed 13 or 15 major league players. You spent 40 years or 45 years in the game, but what did you do to build my kingdom?" Mm-hmm. That scares me more than any, that drives me to try to live my life very intentional in such a way that I can be an influence and impact people's lives for eternity.
That's great. He is Kevin Burrell, MLB area scouting supervisor with the Chicago White Sox. And this was fantastic, man. We should have you back on. I'm sure you got a lot more stories to tell, and we'll share some of them here on the show. Thanks for joining us, and all the best to you in 2021.
Thanks so much, Jason. Appreciate it.
Love that conversation with Kevin Burrell, the area scouting supervisor, Major League Baseball scouting supervisor with the Chicago White Sox. And Kevin's just a great guy with a heart, that heart of discipleship and ministry and using his job in baseball to reach people and share the gospel. Like, that is what it is about. And if you're in a job right now, a secular job, and you think, man, I can't be a Christian in my job, or this job just doesn't allow me to really live out my faith, you know what? God has planted you right where you are, and he's called us to bloom where we are planted. And it's right in that ministry, right in that area right there, wherever you are, that he wants to use you to point people back to him. And that could be in a bunch of different ways. Kevin was telling me offline after we finished some ways that he's modeling discipleship to the guys that he's discipling so that then they can model that to others and reciprocate and multiply. And that's really what it's about when it comes to followers of Jesus in the Great Commission, in living out that commission from Jesus to go and make disciples of all nations and teaching people to obey all that he has commanded. And Kevin's doing a great job with that. You can give him a follow on Twitter. He's at KDB_MLB, but you can search Kevin Burrell, Burrell. Give him a follow and let him know that you heard about his story here on Sports Spectrum, a really fascinating story with Kevin Burrell. We appreciate him for joining us here today on Sports Spectrum. We also appreciate our partners and sponsors for today's show, Ronald Blue Trust, offering comprehensive financial services and objective advice to over 9,500 clients across the wealth spectrum in all 50 states. You can check them out at ronblue.com for all of your financial concerns and needs and questions with Ronald Blue Trust, ronblue.com. Want to direct you to our website as well, sportspectrum.com. And then in whatever app you're listening to this podcast on, you know the drill. We ask you all the time, but it's so important. It really does help get the word out when you subscribe, when you rate and review the Sports Spectrum podcast. It gets the word out. Rating and reviewing and subscribing literally takes about 30 seconds. It does not take long. And it's an easy way, especially on the Apple podcast app, to just get the word out about Sports Spectrum and all that we're doing with the podcast and the podcast ministry. We also have a podcast network as we close here, and really just want to encourage you to subscribe to all of our shows on the podcast network, including Recalibrated with Mallory Brown, the show again called Recalibrated. And that's a great show for the ladies. So guys, if you're listening and you have a wife or a girlfriend or a daughter, and you want to hear about women in sports and women in sports ministry, Recalibrated is a great show. And then Table 40, which is coming up on almost a year now, Matt Holliday, the former baseball player, seven-time, eight-time MLB All-Star, is hosting the show with his wife, Leslie, and it's a dynamite conversation of a show, Table 40, where Matt and Leslie interview their friends in the baseball world and other people outside of the sports world on sports, faith, life, marriage, family, a seat at the table. That's what Table 40 is all about, and talking about Jesus with Matt and Leslie Holliday. So make sure you subscribe to that show as well, Table 40. We're so thankful you tuned in. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time right here on the Sports Spectrum Podcast. I hope you all have a great rest of your day, and please do stay safe.